Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Damon Hackin. Stop me if you've heard this one before, Damon, but Scottie Scheffler flew home last night with a trophy. Feels as though we could have had this conversation any number of days in 2025, 2024, 2023, 2022.
Well, we did.
It's barely been 4 years. 4 years next month since he actually won his first title. Now 20.
Yeah, and the conversation, I think, is changing from Scottie against the field to Scottie against Tiger and Jack. I think we've been reticent as broadcasters to go there. We're kind of saying it's Tiger-ish, Tiger-like, but when you look at the numbers, the haul, the consistency, I think Scottie is starting to separate himself and starting to look at it like the Hogans and the Tom Watsons. It's time to start making those comparisons.
Yeah, there's an inevitability about Scottie Scheffler on a Sunday that we haven't really seen since the Tiger Woods era. And I know a lot of great players have had great runs in that period, but none of them look as inevitable as he does on a Sunday afternoon. And it's not just how routine he makes the wins. It's the margins have now become routine. Of those 20 wins, 11 of them have been by more than three strokes. And that's really separating yourself because he's playing a lot of strong fields out there week in, week out. And when you look at particularly at the American Express, played over three golf courses, that's a real birdie fest every year. In fact, you have to go back all the way to 2009 to find anybody who won this tournament by a margin of more than two strokes, and that was Pat Perez. If you want to find somebody who won it by the margin that Scottie Scheffler won it by, you got to go back 25 years to Joe Durant winning out there. He's just, when he puts himself in the mix, he doesn't make errors that cost him anything. I mean, the one error he made yesterday, he hit an 8-iron in the water
right.
on 17, which was kind of shocking at the time.
He had a 6-shot lead.
Exactly. He'd given himself all the margin in the world. He could have hit another one in the water in 18 and still won by more than one stroke out there. I think what he's done in 4 years, and it will be, we're still a couple of weeks away from the four-year mark of his first PGA Tour victory. To me, it's really striking to put himself in that Tiger-Jack conversation right now so early. And he has separated himself from the rest of the game right now. Last year we talked about, you know, Rory wins the Masters, Rory wins the Players. There was a head-to-head there. But the difference in the world ranking now between Scottie Scheffler at number one and Rory at number two is the same difference between Rory at number two and a guy at 677th in the world ranking. That's about as far ahead of the field as you can get.
That is, and even as this feels so familiar as it does over the last few years, this is the first time Scottie has won his first start of the season and what that portends to his peers. And when I covered Tiger Height of Power, I always wondered, what would the response be? What could his closest competitors do? And this may be a case where there's nothing that they can do, that Scottie is so special and so superior. That's about it, right? Hope he stubs his toe. Hope he breaks his some glass and cuts his hand again. He made a little joke about that. You know, he's happy he had an uneventful offseason. Mm-hmm. But my goodness, you're right. Whether it's a large event, a medium-sized event, a major overseas, he is insatiable when it comes to finding ways to win professional golf events.
To me, the question now becomes for this year, is it a situation where Scottie elevates the people around him because they say, okay, well, he's the bar. This is what I need to do to get there. Or does he do what Tiger did and crush them? Because Tiger never had a rival in his time. Tiger, he elevated the game in so many different ways, but he didn't really elevate the guys around him because none of them were really able to step up to his level at that time. You could probably make an argument that there are Rory McIlroy is obviously the closest who could go toe-to-toe with Scottie Scheffler right now. Maybe there's a couple of other guys out there you'd like to think, okay, well, are they going to deliver something through the course of this year? But he's making a statement early, and he's not giving them much hope that, you know, it's going to be a slump for Scottie Scheffler this year because he makes it all look so simple. He's not having to break a sweat to do this week in, week out.
Yeah, his peers probably hoping he takes a lot of time off. He is not playing this week in San Diego, but we can turn our focus to Torrey Pines and the Farmers Insurance Open from La Jolla, California, just outside San Diego. Players navigating the north and south courses at Torrey. Coverage begins Thursday on Golf Channel. And yeah, no Scottie, but all eyes will be on a five-time major champion, Brooks Koepka, who returns to the tour as part of the returning member program. creating an expedited path back for Liv's most accomplished players. Koepka eligible to play this season on tour with an assortment of stipulations. He is scheduled to meet with the media tomorrow at Torrey Pines. We will carry that press conference live on Golf Today.
And here is the timeline of the last few years in the world of Brooks Koepka. In March 2022, that was his last PGA Tour start. He lost in the quarterfinals of the Dell Technologies match play. Joined Liv in June of that year. Won the PGA Championship, though, in May of 2023. But when he missed the cut of the Open last summer in Port Rush, that was the 10th straight major outside the top 10. December, of course, he announced he is leaving Liv Golf. And this week, returning to the PGA Tour Farmers Insurance Open, and we're going to be covering this story all week. And with more, we say hello to Todd Lewis from Torrey Pines.
Yeah, hi there, Eamon. And there are several players that were in the field at the American Express last week that are playing here at Torrey Pines for the Farmers Insurance Open. And they've made their way here to Southern California and getting ready for this prestigious event on the PGA Tour. But all eyes will be focused in on Brooks Koepka returning back to the PGA Tour after leaving to play on the LIV Golf Tour. How will he react as he comes back to the PGA Tour, given how controversial it was for him to leave and actually quite newsworthy that he is coming back? Well, we will see not only how he will react, but how he will interact with PGA Tour members here on property. And I talked to a few of them yesterday to get their reaction of Brooks finally walking inside the ropes once again on the PGA Tour.
He's probably got a lot of making up to do to players out here. Overall, I think it's great for the tour, him coming back. He's a very competitive person, and he wants to be on the best tour. He's won a lot of big tournaments in his life, and I feel like he's got a lot of good golf ahead of him, and he wants to compete at the highest level. And for him getting back on the PGA Tour, we'll kind of fulfill that and hopefully get him back to where he wants to belong.
What do you think your emotions will be when you see him or maybe interact with him?
Yeah, it'll be fine. I've known Brooks for a long time, back to our college days, and he's always been great. For me personally, I'm glad that he never really badmouthed the PGA Tour when he did go to LIV Tour, and he kind of went about it the right way. So I'm glad he's coming back. I think it adds a lot to our tour, and looking forward to seeing him play.
To be honest, I don't know. I think there's going to be a lot of excitement for him to be able to be back. I know that it was a risk for a lot of these guys to go over, and the unknown of what would the penalties be. And obviously I don't know how many years he's been over there. I can't remember, but it's been a while since we've been able to see Brooks. The only time I get to see him is at major championships. So look, at the end of the day, more players that are talked about in regards to the elite level of like a Brooks Koepka that come back to the tour, the better. I think the product always is better when we have the best players in the world playing on one stage. Obviously, when LIV came about, that was a tough decision for a lot of guys to go over there. I know that a lot of it was family and business choices that they made, and some saw dollar signs, and that's okay. And obviously, Brooks has come back to the tour. I think there's a lot of excitement for him to be able to come back. I don't know what the rest of the guys are going to think. Like I said, I think it's better when a player like that is back on the tour. I'm looking forward to welcoming him back. I think I've always known him as a good fella, and I've got along with him very well. So I think there's going to be some disappointed and some happy that he's back, just because I think some people thought that he probably would have deserved, you know, a harsher punishment than what he got. But look, I mean, at the end of the day, all I care about is the tour being, as you know, the best product it can be, and Brooks being back on the tour is better than what it was, you know, last year. So we're happy.
You heard from Jason Day and Harris English. I will tell you that I've talked to a lot of elite players, and they kind of echo what those guys are saying. They are welcoming Brooks back. They don't really have that much animosity. They know he is paying a bit of a price to come back to the PGA Tour. But it's not an overwhelming majority, at least in my opinion, because I asked several other players to come on and talk about Brooks returning to the PGA Tour and give us an interview, and they simply declined. because they did not want to talk about it. And I think there still may be a little bit of scar tissue here because it wasn't that long ago. Some of these players out on the PGA Tour remember when Jay Monahan had a mandatory meeting at Quail Hollow during the Truist Championship and said, if anybody leaves the PGA Tour and goes to LIV Golf, you will be banned from the tour for life. Well, obviously, that's not the case. We have a new CEO in Brian Rolab. Jay Monahan is no longer in power there. But there is still a bit of friction, I feel like. It'll be interesting to see how these players react and how much Brooks Koepka reaches out to these players. He says he wants to have conversations with them. He wants to have one-on-one conversations about his decision to leave and to return. So that'll be interesting. As for Brooks and his play this week, well, that'll be interesting as well. He's played the Farmers Insurance Open only three times in his PGA Tour career, missed the cut twice, never really threatened here. So you combine the fact that he doesn't have a great track record here and all the emotion that is involved with him coming back to the PGA Tour, it'll be interesting to see where Brooks' game is this week here at Torrey Pines. Guys?
Todd, thank you for that. We'll check in with you again a little bit later. Damon, it is going to be interesting to see the dynamic that comes up in terms of the interactions with Brooks Koepka. And as he said, there are going to be a lot of one-on-one conversations. But, you know, Koepka's probably going to have a wry smile on his face as well, because a lot of the people who will be posturing that he shouldn't have been allowed back, he will know, are people who very seriously considered going to LIV themselves and either didn't decide to do it or didn't get a number that really appealed to them in the end. So there's definitely going to be a lot of public posturing on all sides of this. But he's made clear, I spoke to him a couple of weeks ago, and he made clear that if there are feelings that are hurt, he will have those conversations with players. But he's grinding on his game because I guarantee you he wants to get this week over with as fast as possible, because there's going to be obviously the press conference tomorrow, but there's going to be a lot of scrutiny on his answers to those questions. There are going to be presumably a lot of questions he will be asked that he cannot answer because of whatever the terms are of his separation agreement with LIV. He's not going to be able to get into a lot of detail on that, I'm guessing. And then just the scrutiny of his play as well. He has not been playing particularly well. He started to show signs of life in a few European Tour events at the end of last year.
Yeah.
But he's been a couple of years in a slump now. So I'm guessing he just wants to get this out of the way and probably feels a lot more comfortable in Phoenix the week after.
Yeah, I'm curious about the reception of the fans, of his peers as well. But, you know, he's someone who's been number one in the world. You don't become number one in the world and a five-time major champ without having a pretty finely tuned, I don't give a crap meter. And I think whatever anyone has to say would only be fuel to his fire. I think big picture, there'll be questions about whether he can return to being that player. I think the tour has changed since he's left. Scottie Scheffler is the alpha male of this tour. Rory McIlroy has a career grand slam. Short term, maybe some discomfort. Big picture, Brooks Koepka is Brooks Koepka. And I think anything that somebody says or does, he can either block out or use as logs on the fire.
Yeah, and, you know, there definitely was a time when he was one of the silverbacks on the tour that nobody really wanted to mess with out there at all. You know, Todd did mention the fact that he doesn't have a great track record in the regular tour event at Torrey Pines. He was fourth in the US Open on this golf course 5 years ago when John Rahm was a champion. But you can be sure that Brooks Koepka's trying to prove a point, but at least get through the week by first doing no harm out there. It's time now for our Golf Today Roundtable. We welcome in the two best beards this side of Scottie Scheffler, Golf Channel senior writer Ryan Lavner and GolfDigest.com contributor Shane Ryan. Lav, I want to start with you. When you look at Blades Brown, we just heard they're so composed, so talented. Do you see the second coming, or is the ghost of Ty Tryon still out there?
Well, the beauty, Amy, is that we're going to have, I don't know, the next two decades to find out, because he is just 18 and a half years old. I think it's pretty obvious from watching him at the American Express that he has the goods. He certainly has the physical tools. You look at his golf swing, it's beautiful, it's efficient, it's repeatable. It's pretty obvious that he and swing coach Justin Parsons have done some great work over the past couple years. He has plenty of length, plenty of speed, nearly shooting 59. He's clearly unafraid of going low. But the last part of the equation, I think, is the most important, and that's experience. And when you look at the past 2 years on the PGA Tour, even going past the past decade, there's very few players who skip the line entirely. You think of a John Rahm, a Ludwig Åberg, Both of those players were older. They were seniors in college before they eventually made the leap to the PGA Tour. Blades Brown, again, is just 18 years old. So he is exempt on the Korn Ferry Tour this year by virtue of locking up his status in 2025. You'd love to see him compete full-time on that circuit in 2026. Learn how to win. Learn how to compete. Learn how to travel. Learn how to be a professional. I really think that could be beneficial for him in the long run, as a opposed to sort of moonlighting on both circuits and trying to figure it out on a week-to-week basis.
What do you think, Shane? This game can be tough on teenagers. We saw Akshay Bhatia struggle early on when he turned professional as a teen. Any concerns about Blades' big picture?
Well, first of all, can I say, Eamon, comparing my beard with Ryan's is a little bit insulting. I mean, look how full this is. It's a little bit like saying you and James Joyce are both Irish writers. Okay, it's technically true that they're both beards, but it's not quite the same. All right, so, yeah, despite the inferior beard, I did think Ryan had a good point, which is, you know, we have 20 years to see what this guy can do, but I thought it was cool how much nerve he showed throughout the course of the week getting to that final group, and then, you know, probably impossible to compete with Scotty. Just it's like being thrust into the, you know, the toughest arena that exists. But if he can learn from that, I mean, we'll learn a lot the next time he's under pressure. But the talent is there, the composure is there. Even hear him, you know, speaking to the press, it's like there's just like a maturity there that reminds you a little bit of Spieth. So we'll see. I mean, this stuff we've all seen, like you mentioned, with Akshay, with everybody, with a lot of people who have been much less successful than Akshay, that it can come and go and people can disappear, or they can disappear for a little while and then come back. So the prediction game is not one I'm necessarily in, but early returns are incredibly positive. And, you know, going pro, obviously a good move. He's ready for it. His skill is absolutely there.
Shane, one of the big stories this week is obviously going to be Brooks Koepka returning to the PGA Tour, first time in 4 years. What are you expecting out of him, either in terms of the public comments we're going to hear or even in his game?
Well, you know, in terms of the public comments, and I think you guys hit on this a little bit before we came on, he's almost the ideal guy to come back in that, yes, he did go to LIV, but he never really said anything too negative about the PGA Tour. Even when he won his PGA Championship, he didn't really talk about LIV that much. So he was not very objectionable in the spectrum of characters who did go to LIV. So I would expect more of that humility as he comes back on tour. There's not going to be any incendiary quotes. I don't think you're going to see any confrontations or anything like that. He's going to say the right thing and just try to get back into the groove. And I think by and large, his fellow players are going to accept him, or the ones that don't, I think, like you saw with Todd, they're not going to want to talk about it. They're not going to go public with it. So on that side of things, I think, you know, expect nothing too exciting. In his game, that's a big question mark. I think that's going to be really fun. It'll be definitely one of the most anticipated first 18 holes of the year when he plays on Thursday. Again, the fact that he's back, I think, is good for the PGA Tour, and now they want him to be the Brooks Koepka of old. That's the next step. So hopefully he plays well and kind of brings some of that old energy back.
Lav, how impactful could it be if Brooks Koepka does play well in terms of maybe making some of those guys on LIV think twice about, hey, Brooks is happy, Brooks is winning again. How impactful could this return be outside of the return, but maybe something larger than just the return?
Yeah, I think obviously we're going to pay attention to what he has to say with the media when he meets at 9 a.m. local time on Tuesday. We're clearly going to pay attention to what he does on Thursday in the opening round. But at that point, it's really up to Brooks Koepka to make this more than a one-month story. And you look at Brooks Koepka, the player, which again, I think is the most appealing aspect of this story. He definitely had some personal matters off the golf course last year, but objectively, he did play poorly. His putting really suffered. His approach play really suffered, even though he did show some signs of life at the French Open, the Dunhill Links. It was overwhelmingly a poor season by his really high standards. And so he's highly motivated to sort of prove that he has something left in the tank. But I do think he could be a symbol for what's out there. If you want to play, as the PGA Tour has in their new commercial, where the best belong, I think Brooks Koepka, one of the best players of his generation, can go a long way in sort of validating that point. If he goes back out and splashes on the PGA Tour, if he wins another major championship in 2026, I think that would be even more proof that the PGA Tour is where all of the best players currently reside.
And we'll hear from Brooks Koepka live on Golf Today tomorrow when he meets the media out at Torrey Pines in San Diego. We're going to continue this conversation with our bearded buddies right after the short break. Lucas Glover has been no wallflower on kind of changes to the tour over the last couple of years. He certainly has a voice that represents, I think, a significant portion of the PGA Tour members, not necessarily always aligned with what the executives want to see. It's going to be pretty interesting to see him in this kind of public-facing role in the Players Advisory Council.
Yeah, and the election, you know, with Adam Scott will be interesting. That's a real Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton type deal where you have one person who is kind of very well known, the voice of the establishment, perhaps, trying to take a populist turn. And then Lucas Glover, the firebrand populist coming out of nowhere, but might have the support of the rank and file. So, no, it really does represent two very different perspectives. It's interesting that Lucas Glover is being put forth as a possible candidate for this because, like you said, he is not shy. He's outspoken in his opinion. He kind of represents that, I don't know if journeyman's the right word, but that sort of middle class of the PGA Tour, the middle class to the sub-middle class. So, yeah, the election results itself, I mean, truly one of the most fascinating elections in PGA Tour history, which isn't saying much, but you know, I wonder if we'll get negative ads. I wonder if we'll get some real mudslinging. Let's hope.
Negative ads. Can't wait for that. Hey, Lav, switching subjects for a moment. Patrick Reed's win in Dubai, it does not qualify him for the returning member program on the PGA Tour, but he acknowledged yesterday that he's a free agent, doesn't have a contract on LIV for 26. Your thoughts on what his future might look like?
I mean, Damon, if I'm Brian Rolapp right now, CEO of the PGA Tour, I'm probably picking up the phone and just seeing what that conversation could potentially lead to. I mean, Patrick Reed has been pretty obvious. He is signaling, I'm here, I'm a free agent. I think the PGA Tour is the best tour in the world. Come and get me. If you're Brian Rolapp, if you're one of the decision makers on the PGA Tour, why wouldn't you want a player like Patrick Reed? In my opinion, it would instantly elevate the competition. He's a 9-time winner on the PGA Tour. He won a couple years ago at Torrey Pines Farmers Insurance Open. So if they wanted to bend some of the rules for the returning member program, 2018 Masters Champion plus a 2021 Farmers Insurance Open Champion, that could be a potential rule here. He's a top 30 player in the official world golf ranking, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, because he's not earning world ranking points on the tour in which he plies his trade most frequently. And I think even from, you know, not even a competitive standpoint, from the entertainment standpoint of why you would want a Patrick Reed, if there is friction between Patrick Reed and the rest of the PGA Tour membership about what went down over the past couple of years, that's good for the product too. Now, this is an entertainment product after all with the PGA Tour. So I think not just even competitively from an entertainment perspective, I think it could be a win-win to bring a player like P. Reed back into the fold.
Shane, continuing this sort of LIV conversation and the beard conversation for that matter, John Rahm last week, LIV gave out its awards for the season. John Rahm was named the Clutch Player of the Year for a season in which he logged 0 wins. Can you explain that one to me?
No. In a word, no, I can't. Nor do I care, Eamon, what awards they're giving out on LIV. It is funny. It's a good laugh item, but that's all it is. You know, and I would say the same for the PGA Tour. If they gave out a Clutch Player of the Year award, it's like, we all know who the clutch players are. We can see it happen. And John Rahm has been a clutch player. I'm not knocking John Rahm, but it is hilarious just to, you know, look, is it a move where they're like, we need to do anything we can to keep this guy on side now that Brooks has gone back to the PGA Tour, now that other people are talking about it? Let's make up an award to give him. I don't know. I don't know what the case is, but it is funny. As far as I've been a sports fan and a sports participant, being clutch is somewhat defined by having won. So I don't know. No clue.
Well, at least he's going to win the Best Beard Award over either one of you guys. But it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, Shane. Ryan, thanks for the time today. Our Golf Week senior writer Bethan Nichols joins us now. Bethan, it's always good to see you. Let's talk about this field this week, because it is the season opener for the LPGA Tour. Then the tour takes a few weeks off before returning in Thailand for a swing through Asia. So we have Gino Thitakun playing this week, but we don't have two of the major champions from last year. Does that kind of speak to this little kind of stop-start stutter schedule issue around the start of the year for the LPGA Tour?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, if you look at the players who aren't coming, three of the big names are Australians. Of course, you have two of those were major winners last year, Grace Kim and Minji Lee, and then Hannah Green as well. And then a couple other top 10 players from South Korea aren't coming. And you kind of can't blame them. It's a long way to come for one event, when the LPGA already has a short off season and they can just go ahead and start their season in Asia and have more rest and more prep time. So, you know, this is actually Gino's first time playing in the event for various reasons. You know, the LPGA, you know, does have a 1-in-4 rule to encourage players to play in this one. But you know, she's battled injury at the start of the year a couple years ago. And for a variety of reasons, this is her first time playing at Nona. So, you know, it wasn't all that long ago. The LPGA had a couple starts in Hawaii to begin their year. I kind of think I wish they could go back to that. That was a great springboard for Asia and a lot easier of a commute.
Well, the tour is looking for buzz, and it hired a hashtag Chad Coleman from Dude Perfect as its new chief marketing officer. He comes from that influencer social media world. Your thoughts on that hire?
I have a lot of high hopes for hashtag Chad. You know, he's a very popular hire in the industry. He's very well-liked and respected. And, you know, when you look at what the LPGA needs, this is really a unique hire for the LPGA. They've never had anyone on their staff that has this skill set. And so I think, you know, in terms of creating more viral moments for the LPGA, which I think they sorely need, you don't have to have a mighty staff. Look at what the DP World Tour, the European Tour has been able to do over the years in terms of creating great viral moments. But beyond that, you know, what he's been able to do in the YouTube space, understanding that when you compare where the LPGA is and its social media following and YouTube compared to other female leagues like the WTA, the WNBA, they're in some cases 10 times behind their competitors in the space. And so finding ways for the LPGA to flourish outside the ropes is massive right now for the tour.
Following up on this idea of flourishing outside the ropes, but I suppose inside the stadium, the TGL announced the women's version of that Bathan to take place next winter, which presumably will have some kind of schedule shuffling required for that one as well. Were you surprised that the announcement was for a women's version of it rather than a co-ed version?
I was stunned. I'll be honest. I never even entertained the idea of the women and the men not sharing the stage and there being a completely separate tour for the women. I don't know. Maybe it was my naivete, but I had hoped that that would be the case. Even if you just added one woman to each existing team, I think that would be highly interesting. So, you know, I have a lot of questions. You know, of course, the chief one being where are people going to be able to watch the women? That's something that we don't know. Will it be streamed? You know, which channel will it be on? Who's going to play? Right now, we've had some obviously big stars sign up. Nelly Korda is not one of them, which sometimes, you know, I look at that, I'm like, how do you start something without Nelly Korda? But then on the other hand, Scottie Scheffler is not doing it on the men's side. And, you know, and maybe it's more important to get Nelly to say yes to something that she really wants to do. Now, I don't know, maybe Nelly's, you know, signs on and they announce that later on as the months go by, who knows. But you know, I do think it's important that the LPGA has a time to share the stage with the men. It just seemed like a no-brainer of cross-promotion.
Beth Ann, the PGA Tour has a world number one who's thriving, not to mention a good rival in Rory McIlroy. You have an American and a European. You have Brooks Koepka returning to the PGA Tour. What does the LPGA need to have happen in 2026? What's the dream scenario for the LPGA in your mind?
Well, the dream scenario would be to have that great rivalry. I mean, I think that would be fabulous to have an American and an international player going head to head. But I think the LPGA needs a dominant player. If they don't have a great rivalry, at least a dominant player. You know, I love the variety. I love the depth of the tour right now. But the 29 different winners, it's just so hard to create momentum around that and to build stars around that. And so, you know, if Charlie Hull could get in there and win a major and spice things up, that would be fabulous. You know, Lottie Woad, you know, take off as she certainly seems built for majors. But, you know, when Nelly won seven times in 2024, the LPGA wasn't really positioned to help her star shine brighter. And I think Nelly could have said yes to more opportunities and certainly could have done more on her end. But I don't think the LPGA was ready for that. And so my hope is that Craig Kesler is laying the bricks so that when something else pops, the next player pops, whether it's Nelly or someone else, that the tour is ready.
Yeah, hopefully hashtag Chad ready to take that opportunity and make it a viral moment. Bethann, we appreciate a few minutes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we're making the turn here on Golf Today. Coming up next, got a World Golf Hall of Famer, winner at Torrey Pines, the one and only Davis Love III. That's next.
Time now for our past champions chat as we welcome in the World Golf Hall of Famer. Davis, it's always good to see you. First question to you is, you did have open heart surgery a year ago. Is everything fine? Is the ticker working well these days?
Yeah, the ticker's working well. I said while I was on the table for 5 hours, there were some other parts he could have fixed that don't work so well. My hands are stiff and my back's stiff, and I'm a tired old golfer. I can tell you what it takes to win at Torrey Pines as a young, strong golfer. I'm not that anymore.
That was your 10th win on the PGA Tour, David. There were 11 that came after it. Do you find it difficult to actually recollect the specifics of victories like this one since there were so many of them?
Well, not that there were so many of them, that they were so long ago. I guess the biggest thing. I do remember when you rattled off those birdies in a row, I did have some good Sundays in my career where I came from a little bit behind and ran away with it, which is the nice way to do it. I tell my younger friends that are knocking on the door, I said, just wait. You'll be four groups from the end and you'll be two or three back and you'll shoot a low score and you'll win. It's a lot easier to do it that way than running ahead with the lead in the last group. But I do remember Torrey a lot. It was a great golf course for me back in the day. My great friend and teacher, Jack Lumpkin, said, you know, they can make a course really hard if they take the short holes and they make them the long holes. And that really suited my game when they renovated that golf course.
Davis, you won a lot, 21 times, but I have a theory. I think that technology hurt two great drivers of the golf ball in particular who hit persimmon like nobody's business, you and Greg Norman. Am I crazy to think that you might have won even more had you still been able to hit golf clubs like this?
Well, I love seeing those old pictures of a Titleist hat and a wooden driver. Those were the days. But yeah, Scott Verplank would tell you the same thing, that I would say it about Scott and Scott would say it about me, that we were really good with wooden drivers, and the technology certainly changed. But, we changed it on Jack and Arnie and that generation, so it continues to change. But I was very happy in 95, 96, 97 when Larry Bobko was trying to get me to change from a wooden driver to a metalwood. I was driving it pretty dang good. I didn't need to change, but certainly now it's a different ball game. I mean, the jump face technology, the guys that swing it fast get more out of it certainly than we did with the woods, and it's certainly changed the game.
We were just kicking around before we come on with you, Davis. What would be a realistic total of victories for Scotty Scheffler, given the clip that he's winning at these days? Damon suggested 50 is a nice round number. Is it ridiculous to even suggest that Tiger could ultimately be in his view at some point in the future?
Well, we said nobody would ever play as great as Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. And now we're talking about Tiger Woods maybe has eclipsed Jack Nicklaus. And then you go and think, well, can Scotty, even touch Tiger? So who knows? But if there's a guy to do it, a guy with the right attitude and the right golf game, it's certainly Scotty Scheffler. You know, Rory McIlroy obviously is another guy that the name gets thrown out there. You know, how great could he be? But you have to not get hurt. I mean, if Tiger hadn't gotten hurt, we wouldn't even be talking about it. We'd be talking about hundreds, not 80. So I hope Scotty stays healthy. You know, the only thing that stopped him a couple times in his run since 2020 has been a policeman arresting him and then cutting his hand on a glass is the only things that slowed him down. So I don't see anything happening anytime soon that's going to slow Scotty down the way he's putting.
Davis, you have great relationships in this game. You have your finger on the pulse of this game. There's been a lot of discussion about the West Coast swing, moving it outside of the shadow of the NFL playoffs, maybe even losing part of Hawaii as well, or at least shifting it. Your thoughts on getting some of these early winter events away from the Patriots and the Broncos and the Rams and the Seahawks?
Well, I know that ultimately, what the PGA Tour has to do is put great tournaments on TV with great players. The The way to do that, I don't know, but it certainly has worked with the FedEx Cup playoffs, is getting it away from competing with the NFL. Now, there's something to be said. You know, we're always wanting to play golf and we're always wanting to watch golf all year round. It's just like everybody wants to watch football year round. They watch another league in the spring. So I think we need to figure out how to get the best players together in the best time slots during the year, and then let the rest of it unfold. The fall has been great for the PGA Tour players. It's been great for sponsors. It's been great for everybody. TV likes it. They don't love it like they like the Masters or the Players Championship, but they like it. So I think we have to balance it out. But I agree with what Brian Rolapp's doing. He's going hardcore. He's not afraid to make changes, not afraid to take things on. And I like the way the direction the tour is going now.
In your 40 years out there, Davis, you've spent a lot of time around the administration of this game, and you understand what goes into making the decisions that are made, sometimes even if they're somewhat controversial or not all that popular. What's your view on Brooks Koepka coming back this week? Because it does seem that when you talk to veteran players, certainly players on the Champions Tour, the sentiment tends to be maybe a little bit harder there than it is on the PGA Tour.
Well, I think, again, it's been a long 5 or 6 years since this whole controversy with LIV Golf popped up. I was obviously in the middle of it as a board member and in the middle of it as a President's Cup captain. So I was very opinionated, and I'm still very opinionated now. But the players that left were told the consequences, and the players that stayed were told what the rewards would be. And those have all pretty much happened. What Jimmy Dunn and Ed Herlihy and Jay Monahan put together to get us out of the lawsuit and put together this stock program allows a way for a veteran player like me or a Rory McIlroy or a Scottie Scheffler to accept that Brooks Koepka has a route back. So I think there's been some mistakes made in any business, but it was genius what those guys came up with. And I think we're in a good place. I'm happy for Brooks. I'm a Brooks Koepka fan. I'm glad he's back. But a lot of guys, they were told what their consequences were, and they're going to have to live with them. And it's unfortunate. But if you do the right things and you pay your dues like Brooks did, I'm sure he's going to be welcome back.
Davis, we'll leave you with this one. Can the U.S. Ryder Cup Task Force be deemed a success without a road victory?
Well, I think we, as a Ryder Cup team, you know, we did it, 10 plus years ago? We restructured and we set a new game plan. Every once in a while, you have to have a reset. Right now, we need another reset. Obviously, the best thing for the Ryder Cup is for Tiger Woods to jump in there one way or another, for Scottie Scheffler and Patrick Cantlay and those guys to keep playing like they're playing. But yes, we have to start winning both home and away. We free it up and play great in President's Cup. So we just need to relax and free it up. And maybe there's a year where the Europeans don't putt so great. So that would help too.
Maybe next year in Ireland. Davis, great to see you. We appreciate a few minutes and we'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you. Have a great week.
A certified golf nut in Dallas joins us now. Is that true? Because, you know, we struggle with the game. Are you the one guy who's actually figured out this crazy game and how to play it well?
That is laughable. Okay. But I tell you what, watching those pictures, last night I sent them to producer Chloe. Did it with tears in my eyes. As we look outside, there's 18 inches of snow.
Yeah.
And we're surviving this. But the weather will turn and we'll get to golf again. And I got, you know, addicted to it during the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
I grew up playing it. My father was obsessed. And he had it on every weekend. So even, like, no matter what tournament it was, he was watching golf every weekend. He was a big Freddie Couples guy. That was his guy. Davis Love you had earlier.
Yeah.
Davis Love as well. And then Tiger became his guy later on. But yeah, I loved the game, grew up playing it, kind of went away from it, playing a lot of basketball. Through my 20s, I lived in New York. It's a bit of a hard hobby to have in New York City. But the pandemic kind of brought me back, a reason to be outside. And like a lot of, it became trite but true. A lot of guys in their mid-30s, we reconnected with the game and now reconnect with a lot of friends around it.
Talon, as a studio analyst now, you offer your unfiltered views on professional athletes. I'm curious how they respond to that, because often they don't like analysis that's even fair. And there's certainly a reputation of golfers or particular snowflakes when it comes to being criticized. What's your experience in dealing with the athletes when they hear something that you know to be true and your fair opinion, but they don't really cotton to it?
That's a great question, Eamon. I think that what I find interesting in covering college sports is the players, a lot of times, they're not the ones that are going to dialogue with you directly. But it's all the coaches. It's the figureheads of the programs. that are going to stand up for their players at times and want to have that discussion. And honestly, at times, it's just saying, well, this is what I think, this is what I feel, and we can have a disagreement. Or at times, you know, I know I'm saying what you said in practice, or you've told me privately. I know I said it publicly, and I didn't address it to you, but you know it's true, too. So, but you may not like how it was worded, but it is what it is in some regard. The what you put up there, when I covered the ACC network in particular, that was a subsidiary of ESPN. So I would be on ESPN on Studio G saying one thing about a team. I can't walk into Studio E and say something different because ACC Network's at the bottom of the screen. But those coaches at times wanted you to do that. They wanted to be a mouthpiece for the league, but that's just not our job. If you don't say what you think and feel, you lack credibility and you can't do the job.
What was the transition like for you from player to broadcaster? When did that job become something that you wanted to pursue?
I thought I always wanted to be it. I thought my life was going to be like Bill Walton. I thought I'd be an NBA player, then talk in the NBA. Didn't work out like that. It didn't quite happen. But I left school, not school, I graduated in 2006 and went into marketing and advertising in New York City, worked at a bunch of agencies. And my side job was Columbia's like, we're starting a radio station. Do you want to be the analyst? I was like, sure. Are you going to pay me? I said, no. I don't care. I'll go anyway. So it was fun. Our first game actually was at Duke. So the first game I never played in. And the first game I called was at Duke with like a Cameron Indoor. Wow. 45-minute pregame show. I'm up in the gantry. Like I was, this is awesome. And I took my headset off. As soon as I was done, I was like, okay, I have to find a way to do this. It took me 5 years as broadcasting as a side gig to find my way into that. MSG Varsity, MSG's the network, Madison Square Garden Network, started a high school specific network. Verizon Fios launched in a couple different markets. They wanted to penetrate high school sports. So both those places gave me an avenue while still living in New York City and working as a real job to get paid in marketing advertising to do this as a side gig. After about a year and a half of doing that, I just quit, went all in. And fortunately, honestly, NBC was my first home. So that was the first place that got me a national job. They had the Ivy League package, which gave me a chance to kind of learn this business and make it a career.
And that career has risen at the same time as all of the NIL rules have kind of roiled the entire amateur sports league. Certainly been impactful in basketball. Is there any reason for us to think that it's not going to be similarly impactful down the road at some point in golf? Because it seems just unavoidable in every college sport now.
Oh, yeah. For golf, for sure. Because it's that individual success. So if you get this one player, he or she could change your program or can change the prominence. I mean, there have been certain programs that have been more feeders or have done really well and sent a bunch of guys in the pros. But if you want to put a team on the map, you can essentially just pay for that. And you can find the right player or two to put you on the map in the college space and then maybe make that a system in a of success. Obviously, investing in the facilities is a big piece of that too, but I can't see why not. If somebody, and what I did realize, guys, I think I went into the old NIL era with a naivete. I thought it would have to be based on your ROI, and if it's businesses, you're showing a business return. Nah, there's a lot of wealthy people out there that just want to win. And you saw it this past with Indiana winning and Mark Cuban kind of floating around so happy. They're trying to buy experiences. You know, these billionaires and multi-millionaires, you can buy anything, but you can't buy that feeling. Yeah. But they're trying to buy that feeling. So if they're passionate golf fans and golf donors, I think you're going to see the same thing.
Well, you play a lot of golf in addition to donning the headset. You also do a lot of wonderful things with Coaches versus Cancer. Yeah. How did you get involved with that wonderful program?
Well, I mentioned my father before. He passed going on 14 years now to cancer. Oh, wow. And his things, he played basketball at Duquesne, which is obviously an A-10 school. And that's what gave me my livelihood. But golf was kind of his real passion after basketball and imparted that on me. So him passing due to cancer and then this ability with Coaches versus Cancer, a lot of their events are golf events that I participate in. So I had the chance to raise a lot of money and give back. The Las Vegas Classic was the first one I ever went to. Lon Kruger, phenomenal coach, has had so much success. He has been running that program for years, now raises $1.5 million every time we do it. And now that's because it's an elite event, playing Shadow Creek. They're playing Southern Highlands, South Shore, Cascada are like the four that are going to be lined up this year. But every year I've been part of it, Shadow Creek and Southern Highlands are kind of the two linchpins. So if anybody's watching and you want to be a part of it, if you want to sponsor, we'd love to have you. There you go. Come on, let's go. Because we got a bail. The event is in mid-May, and we're driving to really get that goal up to $3 million by next year. So we're really trying to inject more into that event in particular. The national event this year, last year was at Pinehurst. This year's a Baltistrol. So having the opportunity to play these amazing places and destroy them a little bit from time to time. What I did to Shadow the first year was criminal. Just criminal.
It
I just
a
got back
size?
In.
Destroyed that way?
David, it was everything. It was everything.
Destroyed.
It was not strokes.
Like,
it was
not course record.
No. Okay. The other way. Because I just had gotten back in. This was like trying to learn the game as far as my swing and figure that out. Has improved quite a bit since then. Last time at Shadow was much better last year. Was good. But having the opportunity to give back, to host these events, and to engage with people through the game of golf and be able to make an impact in the American Cancer Society has been awesome, and I'm very fortunate to be part of it.
You're also great buddies with our pal Rich Lerner, who's also a basketball.
Yeah.
I think Rich actually loves basketball more.
We called games together. Loves golf. Me and Rich called games together. That's how I met him in like 2014. We were at NBC calling A10 games. We were at GW the first time. We walked around DC and talked about life for 4 hours and called a game the next day. And I learned that dude does love hoops.
He's also, you've been trying to play golf with him for a number of years now. He's kind of tough to get on the schedule. And part of that reason was Rich travels a lot. He's currently in Peru. He sent me a couple of photographs last night of the family trip to Peru. Here he is having swapped his open headgear with one of the locals up in the Andes Mountains. He's on tour. This is the one that interests me. What do you think makes a bigger divot? Rich with this tool or Rich with a 5-iron?
Well, he looks strong there, but definitely the 5-iron. I think the 5-iron, he's just rotated right into that ground. What was he doing there? I got to wait to ask him.
Did you find out?
I think it's just a PR shot. There's no way Rich is doing manual labor in the Andes.
He's doing nothing productive down there.
No, he's not. It ain't Habitat for Humanity in the Andes.
Well, speaking of 5-irons, you're off to play Concession, I want to say.
Yeah, this weekend. So we have an American Cancer Society event down there in Sarasota. It'll be the second annual one we've done at Concession, which... I thank the ACS for doing that. I kind of wanted to push that event. It was partially because my father, like that's where he had lived. That's the last time my family all lives down there.
Nice.
So last year was the first event we did there. I did warn them. I'm like, Concession's really hard.
It's brutal.
This is not a smart move.
Need a couple extra sleeves, my friend.
It's one of those courses where I play, like if the caddy says you be 10 feet right or 8 yards right, you better listen. Because I remember we hit one and it looked like it was fading right in. He's going, I'm like, oh, this is perfect. He's like, you're going to hate it. What do you mean I'm going to hate it? Hits off. It goes right down. It's like the third hole. Down that gully. It's like 50 yards back up. I mean, it was tough. People still loved it.
Yeah.
We're going back again. I did hear that they adjusted some of the pins and some of the tee boxes, I think, to make it
soften the greens a little bit. Man,
we needed that. that was an event, but it was awesome. And I'm excited to get back there this weekend.
Have a great time. You're welcome anytime. Thanks for hanging with us.
Fellas, this is great. Love to be back. Love watching the show. You guys are awesome. So thanks a lot.
Now, the APGA season kicked off last week, Farmers Insurance Invitational at Torrey Pines North. Marcus Byrd, who was a 2025 Jeff Daly Player of the Year, picked up where he left off. He won the season opener. That is his 9th win on the APGA Tour, and with the win, he secured a sponsor's exemption into this week's Farmers Insurance Open on the PGA Tour. Marcus Byrd joins us now. Marcus, it's always good to see you. Congratulations on the victory. You've played a bunch of PGA Tour events now. Do the nerves get any easier when you go out there, or have your expectations of what you want from yourself changed the more comfortable you get out there?
Yeah, you know, the nerves definitely get a little easier. But I think you ask anyone, the more experience you get out here playing in between the ropes, you tend to get a little more comfortable. And also the past experiences have helped a bunch as far as confidence and, you know, knowing how I can perform on this level. And I'm just looking forward to going out and having a fun week, and hopefully the chips fall in the right place for me.
Well, you sure seem confident in getting this victory in the Farmers Insurance Invitational. You were, what, 4 under on your last 10 holes? What was the mindset during that explosive stretch of golf?
Yeah, honestly, I played really well the first round. I wasn't hitting the ball as well this second round, and I knew that Wyatt and Aaron, they were right there, and they were playing some great golf. And, you know, I just tried to keep playing my game. I knew I was getting a lot of chances. I was hitting a lot of greens. So just honestly trying to take advantage of the opportunities when they came, and, you know, when it was time to make a few putts, I was just so happy to do so.
You've obviously got the riding the confidence wave now, Marcus. What are the expectations for this week when you go out there and tee it up against the best players in the world at two golf courses that are not particularly easy to play?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing for me is having the experience playing here in 24, seeing what the conditions are like at playing during that week, and just kind of feeding off of that, and knowing that my game's in a good spot, and just hope to be able to be in contention over the weekend and possibly on Sunday. So just want to keep doing what I've been doing, and I think it'll fall in the right place.
Yeah, game clearly in a good spot. What did your offseason look like in terms of preparation, offseason work? What was your focus in particular?
You know, mainly just seeing where my body can continue to get better, figuring out different dynamics of how my swing works. And me and my coach, John Scott, have been working really hard this offseason, seeing how we can continue to improve after last year. And seeing as how I finally have had a pretty decent offseason in between tours. It's been really good, and I'm excited to see how much better we get leading into the season in April.
Marcus, one of the big stories of the week will be the return of Brooks Koepka. He's on property. You're going to be competing against the likes of Brooks Koepka. What kind of energy does he bring? How much of the energy and vibe are you feeling just around that particular storyline this week in San Diego?
Yeah, I'm excited, man. Obviously, Brooks is one five-time major champion. He's an amazing player, and there's going to be a ton of people out here to see him. And, you know, I have no doubt that he's bringing his best game this week. And I'm looking forward to being around great players week to week and just seeing how they operate and just continuing to learn as much as I can and hopefully be on his level someday.
Marcus, it's great to see you. Congratulations. Good luck as you try to go back-to-back and chase another W in San Diego.
Thank you so much, Damon and Naaman. Really appreciate y'all.